It is Locked On Jazz for Thursday, the 26th of September. The points gained prediction reveal live with your thoughts as well. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! Glad to have you with us. Thanks very much for tuning in. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers. Join the chat room, interact with us. We're glad to have you aboard. Should be a lot of fun on today's show because this is the points gained reveal show. This is the show where the lock system of analysis, the lock system of predictions comes through, and then you can all remember how crazy it was and how it didn't work and all the things were wrong with it and tell me how crazy I am and all that kind of stuff. And that's fun when you get to do that and tell me how absurd I am and all of it. All right, let me get into the and then I want to take your questions throughout the show as well. So thanks for joining. We are live on Locked On Live on Twitch, on Instagram at DLock09, on YouTube at Locked On Live, on Facebook at Locked On Live, at Periscope as well. So thank you very much for tuning into the program today. The chat room is open and available to you, and we look forward to having you give me your thoughts. So here is what I did this year. I changed it up a little bit. I used the expertise of the brilliant Kevin Pelton to help the show and to give me a little insight to it. So let me start with points gained. Points gained is a system that looks at how an individual player uses a possession compared to the league average. So this is the offensive metric that I use to judge players. And the really big thing here is it's all based on average. Most player systems are built on replacement player. This is built on average. If Steph Curry, and we can find Steph Curry and use Steph Curry as our example because he's the best player in the league. Let's use Donovan Mitchell because I have it in front of me. If Donovan Mitchell last year used 22 scoring opportunities a game, he scored one less point than an average player would with those 22 possessions because he was not particularly efficient. So Rudy Gobert, on the other hand, in 11.6 scoring opportunities per game, scored 2.8 points more than what an average player in the league would. So Rudy Gobert is a plus 2.8, one of the best in the league. Donovan is a minus 1.0. In the case of the Utah Jazz, they no longer have Ricky Rubio, who's a minus 1.0. They no longer have Jay Crowder, who's a minus 0.5. And they no longer have Derek Favors, who's a plus 1.2. So we'll see how that plays out. So that is how the offensive metric points gained works. That's the system behind points gained. Part two of this is then trying to allocate the appropriate amount of possessions per team. One thing that's been most interesting about doing this over the years is that I will run into, with some regularity, a team who has too many possessions. So the Minnesota Timberwolves of a few years ago had too many possessions, and when they added Jeff Teague and they added Jimmy Butler and they had Andrew Wiggins and they had Karl-Anthony Towns and they had Taj Gibson, who uses a surprising amount of possessions, and you knew they were in trouble. And in turn, that team blew up. The Boston Celtics last year had too many possessions, and in turn, you were ready for them to blow up. That's the thing that's actually been most revealing doing this over the years, is you can see where the chemistry problems are going to come before they happen. This year, interestingly enough, the two teams that have the most possessions, now a little bit of this on one of them we can pull down, but the team that jumps out that actually surprising to me is the Dallas Mavericks. And I'm sure they'll be able to figure it out. Well, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. The Dallas Mavericks, because you have Tim Hardaway Jr., who's a heavy possession user, you're adding Kristaps Porzingis, who's a heavy possession user, DeLon Wright's a stunningly high possession user, they actually come out to having 119 possessions, 17 possessions. No one's over 120. 120 has been my threshold number. I know you're in trouble. Portland is close because Nurkic gets involved in the numbers, and both Nurkic and Hassan Whiteside at the same time get them there. But otherwise, probably not a case for most of the season where that's going to happen. Okay, so that's the first kind of offensive methodology. Try to equalize the possessions. One interesting note on that, Golden State is short possessions. Golden State does, without Klay Thompson, does not have enough possessions amongst the group. Oklahoma City is, no surprisingly, is short. And New Orleans might be a little short, but by the time Zion kicks in, I think that really it's there. And what's interesting to me about New Orleans, who will be one of the major talking points here, is that there actually are plenty of possessions available for Zion. So that if Zion is suddenly using 15 scoring opportunities a game, the same as Brandon Ingram and Drew Holiday, it's not a problem for them because of the fact that they have open possessions. Jackson Hayes actually ends up using some, and they're fine. So they shouldn't actually have a chemistry issue in that. So in the Western Conference, the Clippers are high as well at 118.5, but not crisis level. Nobody in the Western Conference came out as crisis level. So now let's get to the second part of the methodology. We will get to the predictions, but I think it's important I explain how. Well, how did I judge the predictions? I actually used Kevin Pelton, published his analysis of minutes played per roster. And then I used some simple math to figure out the average amount of scoring opportunities a player uses in his minutes played. And when doing that, then was able to equate to what I believed each player would use in how many possessions. And then from there, able to take how many estimate two things. One, how many possessions each player or scoring opportunities each player would use. And then secondarily, at what rate? Because that's then part three of this methodology. At what rate? Players are stunningly similar year to year. If you go look at the impact of teammates and systems and players, it's limited. I know that's surprising to people, and we're talked so much this year about Donovan and an open system and how world different as worlds, and we'll see. And Russell Westbrook in Houston in assist, we'll see. But predominantly, players stay amazingly close to what they were a year ago. And so we actually judge almost all players exactly as they were a year ago. There are a few players that I will mention when we dig into predictions here, and specifically to each team, in which I will tell you, and I will look at it and I will say, you know what? I think this will increase, or I think this is faulty for the following reasons. And for example, Denver, you'll see, surprisingly comes out poorly, and I think that will not be the case because I think Gary Harris had an outlier bad year last year. The final thing is, what do you do about defense? And I have never had any type of good defensive predictions. This has been pretty accurate and pretty well done in regards to predicting how offensive teams are going to rank and what they're going to do. It's been really very good in that regard over the years. And then defensively, I've generally just guessed, quite honestly. Looked at their past projections, looked at who they've added, looked at the players, looked at some real players, but nothing scientific. Kevin Pelton has a defensive scientific plan, and so I have taken that. I don't necessarily agree with it, but that's what his numbers say. He's way smarter than I am, and so I've taken Kevin Pelton's defensive projections for the season and added those on for overall predictions. So that is the methodology of how we're going to do this, and we will take a look at the teams and how they come out offensively, add on the defense, and have the predictions for the Western Conference of the NBA through points gained. And that will reveal one super surprise team for the second straight year have come out as a super surprise team, my biggest mistake last year. One team that's pretty dominant, and one team that's surprisingly not as good as we thought. Today's show is brought to you in part by Intercap Lending. Steve Carter over at Intercap. I got another Twitter note the other day. He's just incredible. I love people who do their job crazy well. And that is what Steve Carter does over at Intercap. Steve Carter was our, that's how I met him, is we got connected to Intercap, and then from Brock Worthen, and then I ended up using Intercap many years back for a refi, and he was amazing. And then we started advertising, and I will admit, when we started advertising, I got a little nervous. Like, do you think that the experience I got was simply because, you know, I'm locked on Jazz and I'm an advertiser? It turns out that is not true. Steve Carter just does this for everyone. So Steve Carter is our personal guy at Intercap for any lending needs you might have. Give him a call at 385-800-8528. That's 385-800-8528. Intercap Lending, NMLS number 190465, intercaplending.com. The reviews are just endless. He goes out of his way to make sure everything is perfect for you. They have 15 branches in Utah, from St. George to Logan, Twill to Vernal. They also have branches in Boise and Vegas. And why are they growing? Why have they doubled their business here? Because they get loans done. And that's what realtors want, because that's how realtors get paid. They do an unbelievable amount of work for everybody on the real estate end of things. And while that's the large majority of their business, about 75%, the interest rate environment right now makes refinancing a no-brainer. And you can do that as well. With interest rates are low and staying low right now. So give Steve Carter a call at 385-800-8528. That's 385-800-8528. All right, let's run down the teams in the Western Conference. I'm just going to do it alphabetically for first to start. So the Dallas Mavericks come out on points gained as the 11th best offensive team in the Western Conference. I took a look at Dallas, used the numbers of 2 years ago for Kristaps Porzingis, and Luka Doncic probably will get better than he was. And interestingly enough, Kristaps was negative 2 years ago. So, and then you add a negative Tim Hardaway Jr., and this team comes out much lower than I would have thought projected. But Luka was a negative offensive player last year, didn't get to the line a huge amount, and then Kristaps was negative 2 years ago before the injury. And DeLon Wright's negative, who they've added, will probably be one of their four or five highest possession users. So there's a real upside here for Dallas if Luka does what's probably reasonable, which is gets a little bit more efficient, gets to about league average, and then depends where Kristaps is. But as of right now, they come out as 11th in the league offensively. The stunner for me was Denver. Denver, 11th Western Conference. Denver came out as the 9th best offensive team in the Western Conference. And I'm stunned by it. I ran the numbers multiple times trying to figure out why this would be the case. Jamal Murray is their number one possession user. He is a below league average possession user or scoring opportunity. And then Gary Harris had a bad year. And Paul Millsap had a surprisingly not as good a year as I would have thought, unless there's a mistake there. Maybe that's the mistake. I looked at Denver time, and I'm going to check it again. I must have checked Denver at midnight last night 10 different times, because it didn't make sense to me that this team could have such a negative offensive rating as a group, and couldn't figure out why. How is it possible that this group that is got the offensive prowess that they have could have that? And the fact is, I actually don't think this is going to have an impact. I have reversed. This is not going to do it. This is not going to change it. I have reversed Paul Millsap and Will Barton. So that's one thing. So I found my first mistake. This is what happens when you do things. But still, it's not going to change things a great deal. Denver comes out surprisingly poorly offensively, which I just don't believe. For all the things where I am not totally convinced that Denver is going to be as good as they were last year, because I thought they got a bunch of breaks, I can't see this low of an offensive setting for Denver. It's surprising to me. They come out as 9th best about league average offensively. Why? Because Gary Harris, who is projected to be their third highest possession user, minutes play guy, is a negative. I don't think he will be negative. And I think that will change them dramatically. I think he'll be a positive possession user. It's hard to do as a shooting guard. And then Jamal Murray, the question really will be whether he continues to be inefficient. If Gary Harris has the year I think he's going to have, they only move to the 7th best Western Conference team offensively. So surprising And maybe the fifth best offensive team right there, probably tied for fifth. But they don't get up to the elite. There's four teams that are offensively better than anyone else. And I would have thought that Denver was in that group, and they're not. So that was a big surprise to me. That Denver, just offensively in the numbers, did not come out as well. How does that change? It changes if Jamal Gary Harris has a much better year, and if Gary Harris gets more fundamentally, Jamal Murray gets more efficient. So keep an eye on that. The Golden State Warriors are short possessions, and that makes them a really interesting projection. If you just move all of the Warriors, so you give everyone like 10% more possessions. So Steph gets an extra shot, Draymond gets an extra shot, McKinney gets an extra half shot, whatever it is, you just move all of their stuff up a little tiny bit. They are the fifth best offensive team in the Western Conference. Surprising. Because Steph Curry is that great. Draymond Green is okay. The rest of their guys are just okay, but they're not negative. Glenn Robinson is a little negative. D'Angelo Russell was negative. Does that change? But really, truly, what this comes down to is just how great Steph Curry is. And that should not be underestimated when talking about the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors project, this is just Western Conference ranking, as the fifth best offensive team. Now start thinking about them if Draymond's playing well and who they are defensively with Willie Cauley-Stein. Where do they rank defensively? Because if that's suddenly a good defensive team, that's actually a really good team despite some of the things that everyone is expecting them to fall off. I do think the question, and I think the zany competitiveness of Draymond Green and Steph Curry will answer this, is what happens when they've been to five straight NBA finals and they're battling in the middle of the pack. But they might not be a middle of the pack team. We'll get into that here in a minute. The Houston Rockets come out as the fourth best offensive team, a notch considerably ahead of the Golden State Warriors, despite I have Russell Westbrook as equally as inefficient as he was last year, which I would assume he is not. But again, the dominant great offensive player that is James Harden makes a tremendous impact here. Plus, you've got Clint Capella's dunking, which is underestimated, same way Rudy Gobert's is, and he's absolutely terrific. And if Russell Westbrook were to get just a little bit better, they still are actually fourth. The other three teams in the Western Conference whose offenses are better than Houston are considerably better than Houston. So Houston will largely be dictated about how well they defend in this upcoming year. The number one offensive team in the Western Conference by a somewhat considerable margin is the LA Clippers. They're just great. There's no flaw in it. There's a lot of possessions here. That's the only thing in scoring opportunities in them. I think Lou Williams will have a hard time getting as many as he did a year ago. And Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, both in the 21 to 22 area, might have to drop off a little bit each in each regard, probably willingly. They are an absolutely terrific team and even better than I thought they would be, because one of our main things that we believe in points gained is the way you build a championship team is you have everybody at league average or above, so that when you force the ball out of the hands of Kawhi Leonard or Paul George or the great Miami teams, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, or LeBron James, it's going to Ray Allen, Shane Battier, or players that have offensive numbers that are at league average. Lou Williams right at league average. Mo Harkless, who they added, right at league average. Rodney Magruder, who they averaged, is a little bit below league average, but he's supposed to use about four possessions a game and may not play. So the LA Clippers are every bit as great as we thought they were going to be. The projection system loves them, has them as the number one offensive team in the Western Conference. The projection system also loves the LA Lakers. The Lakers are the third best offensive team in points gained offensively. Again, the power of dominating. I used Anthony Davis's numbers from 2 years ago, not last year. I used LeBron James' numbers from last year, which was a considerable slip. Kyle Kuzma is a negative offensive player, but Danny Green comes in as positive. Rajon Rondo's super negative. So the one area where the Lakers are different is they have these highly negative players in Rajon Rondo and Avery Bradley and a little bit in Kyle Kuzma. Does Kyle Kuzma improve? We'll see. I don't actually have him. I don't have Donovan improving a great deal. I don't have Jason Tatum improving a great deal. I don't have that happening for them. But if you want to find the reason why they project, JaVale McGee is actually a stunningly good offensive player. And their possession usage is not crazy. It's at 115. It's a little high. But it's nothing that's going to be have a massive impact on players. I think JaVale McGee's 10 shots a game are probably the one that moves down more than anyone else. So the Lakers come in as the third best offensive team in the league, and their greatness is going to be determined largely on what they are as a defensive team. All right, we'll finish out the rest of the Western Conference and give you the final predictions as we continue. NFL season is underway, and it might be that you want to watch a little NFL Sunday Ticket, where my guys over at Stealth Media, Eric and the crew, have it for you. DirecTV and AT&T together. You can take it with you, and you can get Sunday NFL Ticket for free with Stealth Media. When you put DirecTV and AT&T together, you get great things. One, you get to take it with you. DirecTV on your phone, and the data does not charge you. Excuse me. There's no use for data charge because AT&T and DirecTV combined for that deal for you. 72-hour rewind. If you forget to DVR a program you really want, you have 72 hours to go back and get it. You get the best high-quality HD, you get the best coverage, and you save money, and as I said, you take it on the go. So combine your AT&T and your DirecTV and call Stealth Media at 385-399-4186. You just want DirecTV? Call Stealth Media, 385-399-4186, and you want that Sunday NFL ticket, Eric will get it for you. But if you're ready to make the sell switch as well, do it, combine them, save a bunch of money, get the best services, and Eric will have a $100 gift card for you as well. It's all from Stealth Media, 385-399-4186. That's 385-399-4186. Continuing down with the rest of the Western Conference team, Memphis is the worst offensive team in the league. Surprisingly, Minnesota, who I was so curious to run the numbers on, thinking they might come out pretty well, came out as the 14th ranked offensive team in the Western Conference. Obviously, Andrew Wiggins is a killer, but so's Jeff Teague. Jarrett Culver is going to get a lot of play as a rookie. He's not usually very good. Josh Okogie was one of the least efficient. They add Sabazz Napier, who's a negative offensive player. I think this will change a little bit because with their new GM, there's an emphasis on more efficient shots. And that team has always taken inefficient shots. So I think Minnesota will come out a little bit better than the projection system has them. But that's still a little bit of a surprise and an interesting note that Minnesota comes out. You know, if you're looking for your surprise playoff team out of this, Minnesota did not jet up. I actually thought there were a few teams I thought might. The stunner in some ways is New Orleans. They came out as the sixth best offensive team, a notch behind the Warriors and a notch above another surprise coming up here. So New Orleans became the sixth best offensive team. There's an assumption on Zion Williamson that he's going to be positive, which most rookies aren't, but because he'll be dunking so much, I think he will. You add Derek Favors, you add J.J. Redick, who's positive, even with Lonzo Ball as a negative offensive player, but he's not using a ton of possessions. He's a pretty big negative player. So if they're able to figure out a way to have Lonzo Ball not be as negative, they get even better. Drew Holiday last year was right about league average. Brandon Ingram was league average. Not only is New Orleans the sixth best offensive team in this whole kit and caboodle, but they also have the opportunity to get better. Their possession usage is perfect. There's no arguing of who gets the ball. No one's going to feel bent out of shape. New Orleans is the surprise team for the second straight year, actually, running the system. Someone asked earlier how this system worked last year. It wasn't great because we had New Orleans as a home court playoff team, and they obviously had all sorts of internal teams and busted. Oklahoma City comes out as the eighth offensive team. They're a little short on possessions. I think they're actually a pretty good team when you look at who they are. If Oklahoma City does not do anything to their roster, they're a team that looks like a potential playoff team in the Western Conference with a pretty good offensive group if they hold Gallinari and Chris Paul. I do not have a projection for injuries in here. I'm projecting this as teams as though they're healthy in the process. Phoenix comes out much better than anticipated. The seventh best offensive team in the Western Conference. Devin Booker's positive. DeAndre Ayton's positive. They add some nice offensive players to their group. As Kelly Oubre comes out right on league average. Mikal Bridges is a rookie. Ricky Rubio is a big time negative. But the rest of their guys come out all right. Cam Johnson will probably be a negative, getting about 10 possessions, scoring opportunities a game. They don't have any problems with their offensive distribution. And if Cam Johnson doesn't play, and they, as much as I suspect that he will, and he's not quite as negative as I suspect, which is all a guess, Phoenix actually could move up a little bit, as high as pretty easily get to about seventh, maybe as close as sixth offensive team in the Western Conference. The question with Phoenix will be if they defend. The stunner to me on this was Portland, a team that I've talked about thinking they were going to get a much better, that they lost Al-Farouq Aminu and Mo Harkless. But C.J. McCollum did not have a positive offensive year last year. Hassan Whiteside is a much less positive player than I thought. He's actually just right around league average despite all the dunking. Rodney Hood was an inefficient negative player last year, and you're increasing his usage. Kent Bazemore is actually more negative than both Al-Farouq and Mo Harkless, and you're increasing his usage. Anfernee Simmons, who had a great summer league, is also a negative player. Mario Hezonja is a very negative player. They're suddenly loaded with negative players. Just about everybody other than Dame is average or negative, and they come out terribly. I was stunned by this. Portland is the 13th ranked offensive team in the NBA on our system. I have said in other podcasts, without running the numbers, I thought Portland would be the number one offensive team in the NBA. I'm so curious to see what actually happens here with Portland in this upcoming season. Sacramento doesn't come out as well as I might have suspected. Harrison Barnes comes out as one of their primary offensive possession users. He's a negative. De'Aaron Fox, for all his greatness last year, was negative. We don't have him projected as positive yet. Another one that was surprising to me, because I'm such a big fan of his game, was that Bogdanovich is not as positive a player offensively as I thought. And I'm not sure where he gets his possessions as much this year. As Dwayne Dedmon, you know, actually is a pretty positive player. But Bogdanovich was a minus 0.8 last year, only going to the free throw line 6.8% of the time. And he is a pretty vital piece of their offense. So that was a little surprising to me when I ran it. I didn't realize that was the case. Then the addition of Corey Joseph, who is Ricky Rubio negative. Harry Giles is negative. Trevor Ariza was negative last year. So they actually added a bunch of negative players. Sacramento, who I suspected would be, you know, competing for a playoff spot, comes out as the 10th offensive team in the Western Conference. The San Antonio Spurs, again, another little bit of a surprise here. These three teams were the stunner last night. But DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge outweigh each other. Rudy Gay is negative, and they add DeJounte Murray. And this is where the San Antonio rating is going to be a little interesting. DeJounte Murray was a negative 1.5 player, which is hugely negative, one of the worst in the league, his rookie year. He didn't play last year, so assume he gets a little bit better, then they get a little bit more playable. They also have Trey Lyles, who was an incredibly negative player last year, playing about 10 minutes a game, and he has a really big negative impact on them. If those two players rectify themselves and aren't as negative, then all of a sudden they get up to being about the sixth best offensive team in the league. Now, DeJounte Murray is going to play. He has to actually just become more efficient. And then Trey Lyles just might not play. So there's some between the 12th ranked offensive team, the San Antonio Spurs, and the 8th ranked team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, there's some movement availability. One player, two players change, you can actually get a lot better. Now let's get to the Utah Jazz. The Utah Jazz come in as the second best offensive team in the Western Conference behind the LA Clippers. Honestly, I was surprised because Dante Exum and Emmanuel Mudiay are in this system as negative players, as is Donovan Mitchell. So Donovan Mitchell comes in as a negative one with using 22 scoring opportunities a game. You have Mike Conley at 18 at a 0.34. Rudy Gobert's 12 possessions and scoring opportunities a night at plus 2.8. Bojan Bogdanovic at a positive 1.61. Kevin Pelton's system has, somebody asked, why does Pelton's system not like him? They have him aging and becoming less efficient. Joe Ingles is positive. Then you have Royce O'Neal. But Dante Exum and Emmanuel Mudiay have 17 possessions between them and are a negative one. So it'll be interesting to see. But Jeff Green, Ed Davis, and George Niang are all positive players. And the Jazz come out with a few too many possessions, as we talked about yesterday, at 111, but not as significant as I thought. And a plus 4.9 overall. So in summation on the offensive ratings in this system, here's how it works. The Clippers are a 5.8 as the best, considerably higher than the Jazz at a 4.9, who are the second best. The Lakers are third at 4.2. The Rockets are fourth at 2.8, and if Westbrook gets more efficient, that could jump pretty easily, I think. Fifth is the Warriors at 1.3. Interesting. D'Angelo Russell gets more efficient in a new system. That jumps. New Orleans is at 1.15 is the sixth best offensive team. Phoenix at 0.8 is the seventh best offensive team. Oklahoma City is at 8th at 0.6. The ninth best offensive team is the Denver Nuggets at 0.2. I suspect that to jump, but that's a really big surprise for me to see Denver coming at that point. Again, it's because Jamal Murray and Gary Harris were inefficient, but it's their possession allocation is good. I think Gary Harris has a much better year than he did a year ago. He was oft injured. Surprising. 10th is Sacramento. We're now into the negatives at negative 0.5. San Antonio and Dallas are all right together. Sacramento, San Antonio, and Dallas are all at minus 0.5. Then you drop considerably to Portland at minus 1.5 and Minnesota at minus 1.5 before getting to Memphis, who's off the charts bad. So let's take now a second before we get to some of your questions and combine this with defense. What happens? According to Kevin Pelton's system, and I don't totally agree with this, but I'm going with his system because it's better than anything I have. And what I don't agree with is just my own personal viewpoint. The Jazz are the number one defensive team in the West. The New Orleans Pelicans come out as the number two defensive team. The Lakers as the number three. The Warriors as number four. The Clippers as number five. Denver as number six. Houston at seven, tied with Oklahoma City. The ninth best defensive team is Minnesota. 10th is the LA Clippers. I think that is considerably wrong and will adjust that. Tied with the San Antonio Spurs. Then Dallas is 12th. Portland 13. Sacramento 14. And Phoenix 15. So we've already given you the number one offensive ranking of all the teams, the offensive rankings. Now you use Pelton's defensive team and you combine these. And the Utah Jazz come out as the number one seed in the Western Conference. Purely by my offensive metrics and Pelton's defensive metrics, they rank as the number two offensive team in the West and the number one defensive team in the West. I doubt it, frankly, on the defensive end of things. I think the Clippers could be better defensively. Maybe New Orleans better defensively. You know, we're just not big anymore. We've gone from being massive with the greatest defensive player in the world. Now we're small with the greatest defensive player in the world. And I think it'll be hard for us to be as good defensively. Offensively, I generally believe my system. So that has us as the number one seed in the Western Conference. The LA Lakers coming as the third best offense and the third best defense for the number two defensive team. And again, no surprise to anyone who's listened to me in the past, I believe offense and defense equally as important. And so they get valued as such here. The stunner of this system is that the New Orleans Pelicans come in as the third best offensive team. I have to give a quick shout out to NB, who just jumped on to say hello, who I haven't talked to in like 30 years. Great high school friend whose husband is one of my closest friends throughout high school, and his family was incredibly important in my life. So quick shout out to NB, who just jumped on this thing for a quick second, who I had not seen her name in 20 years. So just distracted as always. Little ADD while broadcasting is not the worst thing ever, as we're on Locked On Live on Instagram at DLock09, live on Twitch, YouTube, Periscope, and Facebook. All right, so number one is the Jazz. Number two, the Lakers. The stunner is the New Orleans Pelicans come in as the sixth best offensive team, the second best defensive team on Pelton's rating, and they come out as the third best offensive, the third ranked team in the Western Conference. You know, it's okay. Seemingly that's wrong. I think we could all agree on that, but it's worth at least taking from a number standpoint. There's no emotion in there. There's nothing but numbers. Maybe New Orleans is much better than we anticipated. The fourth ranked team is the Warriors. The Warriors come in as the fifth ranked offensive team and the fourth ranked defensive team on Pelton's system, and they come out to be fourth in the West. Again, they're short possessions, and the burden on Curry and Draymond is going to be significant, but it's at least taking note. The Clippers come in as fifth because they're the 10th ranked team, and I disagree with it. I think that, quite frankly, you make just the subtlest move to their defensive ranking to much more of where we think that they're going to be defensively, which would be Utah's number one, and maybe their number two or number three. And then the Clippers jump really, really quickly up to the third or fourth spot, which they have to be. I just don't know how Kevin's defensive system has the Clippers as the 10th best defensive team in the Western Conference. I tried to message him late last night. He's in L.A. with the ESPN crew, and from pictures on the internet, I don't want to be talking to Pelton late at night right now. Just kidding, Kev. If I were to adjust this as I would see fit, you move the Clippers to the second or third defensive team, and now they're tied with the Jazz for the number one or two seed. You have them as number one and two. You have the Lakers as three. Your stunner is you have New Orleans as four. You have the Warriors at five. Denver then the Houston Rockets would come in next on the list at six, fourth best offensive team and seventh best defensive team. So a little surprising to me. I have Houston as the one or two seed. They're a little lower. That's the Westbrook negative offensive factor. But even if Westbrook kicks it up, their offense doesn't get to Clipper, Laker, Jazz level. So that's a little bit of a surprise to me. Denver comes in as the seventh seed in the Western Conference. Now, some understand that these are all very, very close together. But they're ranked as the sixth best defensive team in the Western Conference on Pelton's system. And as we talked about, a surprisingly low offensive ranking for the Denver Nuggets in this prediction, as they come in as the ninth best offensive team in the West, which I find stunning. You increase Gary Harris and Jamal Murray, and they get to about fifth. And if you do that with them, then they become the fifth or sixth seed in the Western Conference. And suddenly it's not that surprising all of a sudden. So slight adjustment there, and Denver jumps to fifth, which isn't crazy. And it shows you how tight this whole thing is going to be across the board. And finally, another surprise to me is that if Oklahoma City doesn't break this thing up, Jazz opening night start team, I have them as a playoff team. They come out on Pelton's team as the seventh best defensive team in the Western Conference. They came out to us as the eighth best offensive team in the Western Conference. They're short some possessions, so they'll have to pick those up, but that doesn't usually actually hurt your efficiency. It actually helps guys out a little bit. New Orleans is the same thing, where they have to add a few possessions. That actually is usually good for teams, and they come in. So then that means, according to this, Portland and Sacramento and San Antonio don't make the playoffs, nor does Dallas. And what's also interesting is that Phoenix came out so well offensively that Phoenix and San Antonio are the ninth and 10th, with Dallas at 11, Sacramento and Portland tied at 12th, and then Memphis comes in, and Memphis and Minnesota come in the bottom half of the Western Conference. Surprising again on how Minnesota came out on this. So those are the predictions. That's the system we have here. I've got a few minutes for questions. I do have to get to an event in Salt Lake City. But just to sum it up again, and to make a little bit of an adjustment from Pelton's system, I just can't buy the Clippers as the 10th best defensive team. But if I just took Pelton's system and my system and didn't put any personal bias or alteration in it, Jazz are the one seed, Lakers are the two, Pelicans are the three, Warriors are the four, Clippers are five, Houston is six, Denver is seven, and Oklahoma City is eight. That's the surprise. Slight adjustment where you suddenly move Denver's offense up a tiny bit to where I think that they would be more reasonably placed, and you move the Clippers' defense up to where it's more reasonably placed. You get the Jazz as one, the Clippers as two, the Lakers as three, with the Warriors, Rockets, and Denver virtually tied for four, five, and six. The Warriors, the Rockets, and Denver virtually tied for five, six, seven, and then Oklahoma City coming in as eight. And what's interesting on this is if Oklahoma City pulls the ripcord, it's not entirely clear who that next team is, whether it's the Blazers or whether it actually looks to be either Phoenix or Sacramento. So keep an eye on that. That's where we sit with all of this. Let's get some of your questions quickly, and then I've got to jump and get the get to a big kickoff meeting for the Utah Jazz. Who do I believe is a better defender, Bojan or Jay Crowder, from Zach Phillips on our Facebook feed? That's a good question. I think Jay gives a level of toughness, but I think there's a little bit of a masquerade to that. I don't think Jay was as bad as the numbers said he was last year, where they had him 80 out of 90 of power forwards. I think you're asking more out of Bojan on the offensive end, so I think it's harder for him to defend, and there's a physical size aspect, but Jay was a really bad rebounder. So I don't know. I think it's an immaterial difference and probably has to do with effort on the given night. Jay's effort was usually pretty good. Wouldn't it be more important to have the best five end games instead of start them, like put Joe in the Manu Ginobili role, bringing Bojan back into the game at that point as well? That's from Matthew Kevin Kupfer. I personally believe in just playing your five best players as much as you possibly can together. There's all sorts of reasons why Greg Popovich, who knows more about basketball, didn't do that with Manu Ginobili. And I think there's a great question of whether your five best players are always your five best five-man lineup. So I think there's a good question of that. I do think you should close with your five best players. It will be interesting, though. I do Nate Duncan's show for Dunked On Basketball, and you know what? It's interesting what he said. You know, talking to him, his point of view is, well, who do we defend on the wings? You may have to play Royce O'Neal to close games to defend one of the top wing players. How many possessions are there in a game with all our new players? What do we add up to? Great question from Brandon Phillips. There's about 100. We come up to about 110. That's not counting turnovers, so we're high. Everyone's going to have to sacrifice a little bit. As time goes on in a season, you end up usually being able to have those happen in the, you know, time it happens. What if we're the sixth best defensive team and third best offensive team? Is that good enough? Yeah, if it's league-wide, that's great. If it's conference-wise, you're 6-12, and then we're probably okay in the process. So, yeah, that is good enough. All right, super appreciate you guys jumping on for the live show today. I've got to jump, get to something on time, or else bosses get really mad at me. This has been Locked On Jazz. I'll try to get the Eastern Conference ready for you. We'll try to do it actually later this afternoon as a Locked On NBA feature, and then we'll have a Friday show for you and Monday's Media Day. So we're heading toward the season. Hope these predictions are right. Because if so, New Orleans and Utah are going to have very happy seasons. Have a great one. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Locked On Jazz on Locked On Live. Follow us on YouTube, on Facebook, on Periscope, as well as on Twitch. We're super glad to be with you, and we look forward to more live programs. It's all part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Bye, Instagram.